Good morning, good people. This is Kiplin Primus, your host for The Local Take on Jazz 91.9 WCLK. And this morning we are talking to Gary Golio, who is the author of children's books like Jimmy, Sounds Like a Rainbow, and his latest book on Billie Holiday. Mr. Golio, welcome.
Good morning, Kiplin. How are you?
I am excited. Could you tell our listeners how you decided to work on children's books and why these musicians?
Well, I'm an amateur musician in the best sense, you know, in terms of loving music and the power of music. And I've been a therapist for many years. I work a lot with children, well, teenagers and adults who have addiction troubles. And I've also worked with a lot of artists, especially musicians. And like I said, I've always believed in the power of art. And a certain time came about, the book came out, my Jimi Hendrix book came out in 2010. And I thought, you know, this is an important story for kids to know about how a person like Jimmy, who had really nothing when he was a kid in Seattle, found a lifeline in art and music. And, so all of my books are about, one was about John Coltrane, Dizzy Gillespie, and Charlie Parker.
Bob Dylan.
And Bob Dylan's meeting with Woody Guthrie, Woody, who was kind of his mentor and hero. And so they're all, you know, they're intended to give kids an example of what a person can do with imagination and an interest in something that they have a passion in, you know, whether it's art, music, or it doesn't matter to me if it's football or, you know, drawing or just about anything. But kids need passion is a lifeline for kids. And the saddest kids that I've seen as a therapist are those that tell me they don't really have any kind of plan for the future. So the books are hopeful, you know, my plan is to hopefully inspire kids.
I think they are very inspirational. But your latest book about Billie Holiday, didn't just take on her story, you took on her story and her song. And that's a hard song for adults. And we're talking about Strange Fruit. What was your decision making like for that?
Well, you know, I do crazy things, and my hope was to be bold in finding a way to tell kids appropriately without sensationalizing this topic, which is a very powerful, it's a fiery topic because it's about a song about lynching, you know, which was the cornerstone. I think it was the cornerstone of the civil rights movement, and many people feel that way. And so I said, how can I tell this story for kids that makes sense? And once again, it comes back to the power of art and music to change hearts and minds. And the beauty of it, as you alluded to, was that it wasn't just Billie. The real beauty to me was that it took Abel Meeropol, a songwriter and school teacher in the Bronx in New York City, who wrote the song Strange Fruit after he wrote a poem called Bitter Fruit, after he saw a rather infamous photo of a terrible lynching in Marion, Indiana in 1930. And he wrote this poem. And then he showed it, you know, he and his wife sang it, even at Carnegie Hall in New York City, and because they were social activists in the 30s. And John Hammond, the legendary producer who discovered Billie Holiday and Bob Dylan, all these people, he heard it, and he suggested that Abel bring it to this new club. And this new club was opened by a guy named Barney Josephson, because he had been to the Cotton Club in Harlem to see the greatest performers, the black performers in America at that time. And he felt outraged by the fact that if you lived in Harlem, you couldn't go to that club. So he opened this club called Cafe Society, which not only admitted black patrons, but it gave them front row seats. And so when Abel showed this song, he played this song for Barney. Barney said, I've got this. I just hired this young, this wonderful young singer. And I think she should sing this song. And Billie Holiday was that young singer. And it was debuted, Strange Fruit, in a very beautiful theatrical way in spring of 1939. And it became Billie's best-selling song of all time. And she sang it for the rest of her life.
And the title of the book is Strange Fruit, Billie Holiday and the power of a protest song. So why do you think protest songs have power, and what is that power of art like to actually impact our society?
Well, I think the beauty of art, the great beauty of art, is that, especially in music, is that it can deliver a very powerful message without being preachy, because it goes straight into the most primitive parts of ourselves. You know, the parts that have a beat that make us want to. We resonate to music. Human beings naturally do that because we have a heartbeat, and the power of music has been, you know, a part of all cultures since we became civilized human beings. And I thought, well, you know, she understood something, Billie Holiday, that a short song that deals that conveys images without being preachy, without lecturing people, that it went straight into the hearts of all of the people listening to that song. And on many different levels, that's the other beauty of music, I think, is that it reaches you on many different levels. And so it is a protest song, because the sad thing is that even though a bill was introduced into Congress, into the House, in 1919 to make lynching a federal law, you know, to make the crime of lynching a federal law, you would think, well, that's a no-brainer. Of course we would do that, right? The great America, we would do that. But you know what? There was so much contention about it that it took until 2005. And to me, that's kind of shameful. And so I wanted to bring this back into the spotlight. The book is about how these three people came together. And as I said, you know, it's such a powerful subject, the subject of lynching, and such a terrible thing, because we've seen so many young women and men, black women and men, over the last several years, and we know their names, you know, and it goes back to Amadou Diallo and Kendra James and Sean Bell and Michael Brown. I can list them all. And I thought, how can I make a comment on this thing which has so outraged me and upset me, and do this for children, to just give them a sense of hopefulness in the world and their own power?
You talked about music being that primitive force in humanity, and we know medical research has proven, even with brain trauma, people who might not remember how to talk and can't remember words, they'll remember songs.
That's right.
So I'm trying to understand why you thought it was so important for children to understand the power of a protest song. Strange Fruit, I remember the first time I heard it. You know, that's one of those songs that you kind of, it stops you dead in your tracks.
Yes.
It's hard for adults.
Yes.
So how are you able to translate this into content that children could consume and understand?
Well, I think in structuring the book, I tell the story of how Billie was really herself very disrespected at one point when she was singing, and this is a funny thing, right? In a room called the Hotel in the Hotel Lincoln in New York City in November of 1938, and Artie Shaw, who to his credit hired a black woman in his all-white band, Billie Holiday, to sing. He kept Billie upstairs in a room, isolated by herself, because she had a tendency to, you know, to speak her mind. And they didn't want, people in the hotel didn't want other people, the white patrons, to think that any black people were staying there. And finally, she got so upset that she quit. And she thought to herself, where can I do what I know is right? Where can I sing and do the kind of thing, you know, artistically, that everyone can appreciate? And that's when Barney Josephson opened his cafe. But as for kids, the beauty of the book, I think, is that it shows how these three people all got together. And the climax is when the brilliant owner of this club, Cafe Society in Greenwich Village, which allowed black and white patrons to mingle and to see, you know, entertainment together, he said to Billie, you finish your set and everything's going to stop in the club. Waiters will stop in their tracks. The lights will go down. There will be no noise. And this is theater. This is like the essence of theater. And he said to her, you're going to sing Strange Fruit, and at the end of the song, the spotlight is going to go off, and you're going to leave the stage and go behind the curtain, and you're not going to come out for any encores, and we're going to leave people with the power of this song. And the audience was speechless. They really didn't know what to do the first time until one man started clapping. And then there was a thunderous roar of applause, and the house was packed from then on. And I wanted kids to see that one person, Abel Meeropol, who wrote this song, felt that something was important to say. And that, you know, today when there's social media and there's TV and there's so many noises and voices coming at us from everywhere, how can someone stand out? And yet this person took a poem. He wrote a poem called Bitter Fruit and then put music to it because he was a composer also. And one person, Billie Holiday, sang a song that has moved millions of people and changed their thinking. And I think it's a powerful lesson to kids about how a simple act, and of course, you know, within the arts, how a simple act can change culture, can change history.
I think it changed the world, Gary.
I think it changed the world too, yes. And despite, you know, and I don't want to get political too much, you know, but I think that when a lot of people are concerned right now about the nature of our democracy and what's going on, I actually think that much, much good is coming out of this conflict and discussion because we have to rouse ourselves to be strong. And Billie Holiday, she was spat upon, insulted, cursed at, humiliated for singing this song, and yet she wrote it into her contract that if she wanted to on any night, no matter where she was, she wanted to sing that song, she would be allowed to sing it. And Billie had her troubles in life. You know, as I said, I worked with a lot of people who have addiction problems, and there were many reasons why Billie had those problems, especially as a young black woman, you know, growing up in the South. And yet, I have to give her tremendous credit because she went beyond her fear. And that's another thing that kids need to know, that you can be afraid and yet you can still speak out and stand up for what you believe is important.
So, Gary, for our listeners who want to share this story and this book with their young people in their lives, how can they get more information about it? How can they get it to add to their kids' library?
If you go to my website, which is garygolio.com, GARYGOLIO.com, you can see the books that I've written. And, you know, under the news section, you click on that, you'll see a whole thing about the debut of the book, which just came out like 2 weeks ago. And if you click on the cover of the book, it'll take you to another page and it'll explain stuff. And I want to emphasize, you can buy this book at Barnes & Noble or Amazon anywhere. You know, all my books are out there. But support your local, you know, your independent bookstore. I'm sure there are independent bookstores in Atlanta. You know, support your independent bookstore. You can ask your librarian to order it or, you know, in the schools, teachers can order it too. You know, I do school visits and all that kind of stuff. But if you go to the website, you'll see that it is not, as I said, people, teachers and parents don't have to be afraid that this is going. The last thing I would want to do is to re-traumatize or traumatize children with such a powerful subject. So it's treated with great respect and subtlety and, you know, it's meant to inform and to inspire and not to frighten anyone. So.
Well, it's a beautiful book, and I'll just mention it's illustrated by Charlotte Riley Webb.
Oh, yes, thank you. Gosh, I'm so sorry. Yes.
Wonderful illustrator, and it's called Strange Fruit, Billie Holiday and the Power of a Protest Song. Gary, thank you.
May I say one last thing?
Sure.
I'm so glad you brought, and this is my first interview. I've got a few skills. My first radio interview. I forgot to mention how wonderful Charlotte Riley Webb, her illustrations are. She's a wonderful artist, and I think Billie would have been especially gratified to see that a black woman, a black artist, did the artwork for the book.
And Charlotte Riley Webb is a award-winning children's book illustrator. So it's a wonderful story. It's a wonderful book. Gary, thank you so much for coming to share it with our listeners.
Oh, thank you very much.
Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Good morning, good people. This is Kiplin Primus, your host for The Local Take on Jazz 91.9 WCLK. And this morning, we've been speaking with Gary Golio, the author of Billie Holiday's new children's book called Strange Fruit. And we're now joined in the studio by Charlotte Riley Webb, the illustrator. Charlotte, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Now, tell our listeners, when you first were called to do this book about Billie Holiday's iconic song, Strange Fruit, what did you think and what attracted you to this story?
Upon my initial call, I was thinking no, you know, and it didn't have anything really to do with the book itself, the story itself. It had to do with my schedule. I'm actually a professional artist and I'm a painter. And I know from past books that I've illustrated, there's been six of them, they are very, very time consuming. And with that in mind, I thought, no, I'm going to pass this one off, because I'd said the last time, every time I did one, I said, this is it. I'm not doing anymore. But when they introduced this book to me and I read Gary's manuscript, you know, I went through several emotions about it. Initially, it was, okay, I'm reluctant, because I thought the topic too daunting. I mean, it was chilling when I read it. But then as I thought about it, slept on it, prayed about it, I ended up thinking, I says, okay, now this story needs to be illustrated well. And I just felt like, you know, because of who I was, that I could do it. And I went from being reluctant to feeling privileged to have been asked. And then I went straight to obligation.
And when you went to that phase of obligation, did you make any decisions on what you weren't going to portray or what you would portray? How did that decision-making process become?
Well, actually, in reading the manuscript, you know, I knew quite a bit about Billie Holiday and the artists of that era, just because, you know, with my family, my parents, that was the music that played in our home most of the time. So I knew a lot about her, and I was thinking, you know, her story is very complicated, and her life was very complicated. So when I approached it, I was a little bit ambivalent about how to portray it. And I didn't realize how difficult it was going to be until I actually started working on it. And there are certain lines and pages and feelings and mood throughout the story that I did have difficulty with. And I wrestled with the publisher, a little bit, trying to figure out, okay, how best to do this. And there are certain scenes I wouldn't paint. And I had to remind myself who I was doing it for. This is the audience that I'm doing it for. And a lot of the reasons, like the people on the cover and the people throughout the book, even though they're adults, I chose to kind of paint them in a more of a whimsical, youthful way in order to help, you know, appeal to the audience that this book was written for.
And when we talked to Gary, he gave us the history of the song, you know, how it was a poem and how it actually came to be. But I mentioned to him the idea of introducing this to children, and we're talking kids 9 to 12.
Right.
I remember the first time I heard Strange Fruit. Mm. You know, it kind of stops you cold.
Right.
What kind of considerations did you give to that in providing content for children to be able to consume and actually know this story?
You know what? I kind of even now think that the story and the appreciation that children will get from it would primarily depends on their parents and the librarians and the people that present this book to them, because it's hard to fathom for adults how this horrific act of lynching took place. How do you explain that to children? See, and I know, you know, initially the editor had, you know, one of the pages, you know, she said to paint a noose, you know, lynching. I can't do that. No. And that kept me awake a couple nights, you know, just trying to figure out how to present this. And like I said, there's several pages in there that were in even the line where Gary says things that were done to her. You know, let's face it, Billie Holiday's life was very, very, you know, just horrific in itself. So to interpret the song in a way that children could appreciate it, understand it, and grow from it, the whole book, it was a challenge. You know, and this is a biography, so we have to kind of stay true to fact, you know, whereas you take more liberties with a fictional.
And I honestly think that if it weren't for the tragic nature of Billie Holiday's life, I don't think the song would be as iconic, and it would not have stood the test of time as this powerful protest song.
Exactly. Exactly. And it's really interesting. Like now we can look around and say, okay, now we see what protest songs can do or what protests can do. And you're right. I feel the same way. Had it not been, because she brought a lot of her to this song. And, you know, she died early. And, you know, it is said that the song, because of the way she presented it to the public, you know, the way she, you know, commanded the stage, and she'd stand there and the darkness would come over the crowd, and she was not to take encore. She was supposed to sing the song, the light only on her face, and then she's supposed to leave. See, and they said that because of this song and what it did to her internally, that helped bring about her demise, along with her habits, of course. But do you imagine internalizing that kind of pain and presenting it to the public?
And I don't think there's another singer that could have done it the way that
she did it.
I agree.
Right.
Now, Charlotte, your career, you were a fine art painter.
Right.
So how did you get interested in, or how did illustrating children's books come to you?
Actually, they did come to me. I'm still a painter. I'm a painter by profession, and I continue to paint. That's my... that's what I do. I was approached by a company, I guess, in 2002, and they actually sought me out because of the way I paint. I have a sort of a rhythmic stroke, and my colors are bright and bold. And the book was about New Orleans jazz. And because of that, I think this is the same reason this publisher sought me out, because I paint music. You know, it's important to me that a person can hear the artwork as well as see it.
Your artwork has movement.
Yes, yes.
And now, as a child growing up, how did you decide on a career as an artist, and what steps did you take to pursue it?
Okay, I was very, very fortunate. I was raised by forward-thinking parents, my mother in particular. She was a Spelman graduate in 1935. And it's amazing to me how, I think about it now, how ahead of her times this lady was. Very proud woman. And she didn't actually work in her profession, because during that time her degree wasn't valued. You know, she ended up working as domestic. But she kept that pride, and she instilled it in her daughters. And she speak to us in idioms and parables. And it's interesting that one of Billie Holiday's songs, you know, she said, "God bless the child who has his own." She wanted us to be independent, independent thinking, and she raised us like that. And when one of my high school teachers approached my parents about me going to art school, she didn't say, "No, you know, liberal arts is not an area she should pursue." She stood behind me and encouraged me all the way through. And I was just so fortunate, and I think about now how blessed I was to be in a position to be able to pursue. And I went to, I got a scholarship to the Cleveland Institute of Art. We were living in Cleveland at the time, and I was very fortunate. The whole 5 years, I was partly halfway supported by a scholarship. So, you know, and interesting enough, I was one of two black students in the school and did experience a lot of, you know, discrimination going through. But I think I was armed by my mother with what I needed to do to pursue and to just, you know, endure.
And for our listeners who may want to follow you, how would they go about seeing you? What kind of art exhibitions do you have upcoming? How can they find out more information about Charlotte Riley Webb?
Okay. Well, I actually work with Zuccott Gallery, which is near here. It's on Casbury Hills. And I am working toward an exhibition in the fall. I exhibit throughout the country. I've traveled quite a bit and did exhibitions in this country and overseas. I'm on charlottereileyweb.com. You know, just Google my name and you'll find me.
Charlotte, I want to thank you so much for coming and sharing with our listeners your input into this wonderful book, Strange Fruit, Billie Holiday and the Power of a Protest Song.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure.
Thanks for listening to The Local Take on WCLK this morning. Special thanks to our guests for taking their time to speak with us. You can find many of these interviews posted online for on-demand listening at WCLK.com. If you want to recommend a community leader or nonprofit organization you would like to see featured on The Local Take, you can leave a voicemail on the WCLK Community Engagement Line at 404-880-6211, or you can email me at KiplinPrimus@gmail.com. Good morning.